Thundergrunt.
Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Introduce yourselves.
I am Jamie Nash, screenwriter.
That's it?
That's it.
That defines him. Yeah.
I'm Jimmy George. I am a full-time script consultant and a screenwriter as well.
And I'm Bob Rose. I'm a guy.
Just a guy.
I'm just some guy.
Full-time guy.
Full-time dude. Yeah.
I think of many things when I think of Jamie. Good
I know.
Stuff.
Thank you.
I think... All three of us are Renaissance men to some degree.
There you go.
Microwave chef, Jamie Ash. Follow me on microwavechef.com.
Even with a microwave, I suck. All right, so today is kind of, I consider this kind of a special episode because our first episode ever, which I think is our most downloaded episode,
yeah,
too,
definitely.
Is Jordan Peele's Get Out. This is how we started,
the
guys.
The one that started
right.
it all.
Right. That's right. we jumped off on three white guys talking about Get Out. But today we're going to talk about his newest movie, which is Us.
I know. I'm excited.
Right. And so, yeah, just like warning anyone who's listening for the first time, we are three white guys.
Yes.
So take our opinions on this movie maybe with a grain of salt. But I do feel like, you know, Get Out is kind of special to all of us. I feel
yeah, definitely.
It kind of Get Out makes me think of this podcast.
Me
now.
Too.
So
me too.
So let's.
Aww,
it's
warm
little,
and fuzzies.
Little warm, little heart. Jamie.
Yes.
Can you tell us who wrote it and what is the current box office? Because it's still in theaters.
I know. I saw it last night.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to add in Jimmy's dollars manually. Pull out your calculators.
Add what, $12 to whatever
yeah,
we say.
$12.
Right.
So right now it stands at $180 million and some change. It's $134 million domestically and $46 million foreign.
It probably hasn't opened everywhere
probably
yet.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So it's not. Still got ways
fresh.
To go.
Fresh.
It's not like Aquaman, which gets released everywhere at once and blows the doors off things.
Or Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
Your billionaire. Yeah. Your billion-dollar one. Right? Your billies. We'll call them billies.
What was the budget for this? Is that on there?
The budget for this, if you believe Box Office Mojo, is $20 million. Mm. And I kind of believe it because you figure Get Out had the $5 million Blumhouse special
the
numbers.
Model.
And then after he blew the doors off of it with Get Out, he probably got the... And it looks bigger.
Yeah, it's bigger.
It just... The camera
but you know
work.
What? I bet he actually would like... He kept it reasonable, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he probably got offered
$20 million
higher,
reasonable.
You know? He
did
like a Ryan
sure.
Reynolds where he said, no, it's staying a certain...
This level.
I think $20 million is like the upper end of this kind of movie. Like, nobody makes this kind of movie for $60 million anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
$20 million is the prestige version of these kind of movies. I mean, I guess something maybe like It might be made for a little bit more because it has the
Stephen King brand
behind
right.
it. Especially the second It. But yeah, $20 million, that's the height of these. That's about as much as you can make. But just the carnival scenes and all that,
that
stuff.
That was probably costly.
I was like, whoa, he spent some money on this. You know, you could just tell. And a lot of
Well, it takes place in places other than a house.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Right. But then again, Get Out, he didn't even believe he could get that made. So this.
Yeah, exactly.
This
it's
is
all
like,
bonus.
True.
Man.
That was that Get Out bump.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just development-wise, I don't think there really was. I think it was like, you made Get Out. What are you going to do next?
Of
I think
course.
That was
yeah.
kind
yeah,
of the
do you,
development
do,
of it.
Do, is there any idea of the timeline of how long this had been sitting around?
I can't say I
pretty sure
saw
he
it.
Said in some interviews like he had it written like
gotcha.
Before Key and Peele.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't
remember if he said this was written or he's had horror movie scripts just sitting there for like decades.
Gotcha.
He's wanted to do this his whole life, but you know, he did comedy first. That's how he got his name. So
I think it was like inspired by a Twilight Zone episode or something.
The Mirror.
The Mirror.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one. It's a woman who finds, who runs into herself in a train station.
Right.
Oh, gotcha. Which sounds like Orphan Black.
No, yeah, it does. I love Orphan Black. But I don't think it shares much in story. It's just kind of like similar in that duality.
It ignited the spark of the idea.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Inspired by, but yeah. nothing
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
Right.
It feels like a Twilight Zone episode, though.
I mean, he's hosting Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Why not? You know?
Strangely enough, like, I was trying to think of the last, like, 1-2 punch filmmaker out of the gate.
Yeah.
And M. Night was, I mean, obviously comes to mind.
Yeah.
Because he kind of had a 1-2 punch, even though Unbreakable wasn't this big at all.
Unbreakable was the disappointment.
It was.
And honestly,
yeah.
that's why I asked about the history, because I don't know about the history of the scripts, because Get Out, we know, was developed for years, the script. And same with M. Night. Sixth Sense, he was working on it for 10 years, right? And then Unbreakable was like a 1-year gestation period. So the quality, you know, that's why I was curious.
I don't know if it's, but I feel like most people revere Unbreakable versus Sixth Sense now.
But I think going,
and I even,
going back, right?
Yeah.
I even wonder, though, in some ways, Sixth Sense still is like who you think of when you think of M. Night.
Definitely.
I get what you say about Unbreakable, but you still think, you know, I see dead people and the Sixth Sense and the twist. There's
yep.
a twist. All
it's
that
a
kind
twist.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was trying to think of like who the other writer, director, filmmakers like that are.
Also saw some comparisons with this to M. Night. Not favorable ones, but
interesting. I can totally see that, especially with the twist ending
right.
and things like that.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. This will be all spoilers.
The thing M. Night was doing back in the early 2000s, he was just doing these extended. No, I mean, just, I'm not trying to throw him under the bus for it. He was doing extended.
Take
Twilight,
him down.
Exactly. That M. Night, he sucks. The
yeah,
hack.
Right.
No, but he was doing extended Twilight Zone episodes. He was turning like an episode of the Twilight Zone into a movie.
Right. Where he was in it hosting it himself.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
As Rod Serling.
Strangely enough, Jordan Peele's the actor and he's not in these movies.
Yeah.
You know, that's
right.
Kind of a thing. So,
well, I think that would be an ego thing, but yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, this is amazing to think that he's already being revered and we're just still in the run of his second movie.
I think it's just,
you know,
the
what
time
I mean?
That we live in and the news cycle.
The news cycle and everything.
It's completely
it's also
different.
Kind of unfair to him. That's a whole different
podcast. Yeah, that's a different
but
podcast.
But it's a little
I
bit.
I agree with you.
But I think it's unfair to like push master filmmaker on anyone.
Yeah.
On second movie out. That's like, and like, you know what I mean? Like 2 years, 3 years in.
It's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary.
We just have to put these, it's just like, the sports talk thing, like the elite quarterbacks.
Yeah,
let him get some years in and some movies in, and then we'll decide.
I think what's kind of exciting to me about him is he seems to be appealing to the everyman.
Yes,
it's not movies, even though there's these kind of social messages and stuff that are behind it.
Say it.
What's the word?
Oh, elevated horror.
Oh, elevated horror.
The word we hate.
I wasn't even thinking
about
elevated
I thought you were
horror.
Going towards that. He's not appealing to that, the people that would say that word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is.
Right.
And I think that's what M. Night, when people got excited, they were like, maybe he's the next Spielberg, because he's in tune with what the audience wants and how to play the modern audience.
Right.
And I think that's what Jordan Peele is right now. There's nobody better that's kind of playing the modern audience in these original kind of movies,
especially horror.
Yeah,
so
he just knows, you know, what keys to hit, so
nice.
To speak. Yeah,
what we need to hear in the moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about the setup.
Yeah, it's a great setup.
It's a really great setup.
It's my favorite part about the movie. The first act is the you know, the lock in. I've been thinking about that ever since you said that. You want to
lock it in?
Yeah.
The lock in.
Let's just, you know, setup wise,
setting up likable characters.
We get the teaser. You know what? You're starting to see a pattern emerge in Jordan Peele's stuff, right?
Yes,
I totally saw
absolutely.
A pattern.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You get the teaser. You get the little horror beat in the beginning, which a lot of horror movies do. It's not like he's, you know, alone in that, but. This one has a teaser.
It's also his fandom of the genre.
Yeah.
Right. I think this teaser totally ups the ante on his last teaser, which was just
Me
basically
too.
Grabbing a guy and shoving him in a trunk.
Yeah.
Like this teaser with the, I love just the visuals and stuff in this teaser. I thought it was a lot of fun.
No, it was evocative of so many different movies. It made me think of Big the most.
That's so
it
interesting.
Didn't it? It just yeah. made me
Zoltai.
Think of Big.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it was just like, it was a beautiful opening scene.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of complaints about the slow pace of it, but I loved that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, dude, I've seen so many. Then you don't like movies. So.
I like my movie to kick into gear.
that's a different movie though.
I know.
Yeah.
The trailer for me was like, it was nostalgic, but it was the trailer. The teaser, it was nostalgic, but it was also kind of perfect and dreamlike, and you know, it was really cool.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's not explaining things, it's just showing and leaving it up to the audience for later.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, we're talking about the carnival scene and the girl
going
and
into the mirror.
The parents arguing.
Yeah.
The girl separating from her parents. Yeah, I know. But just in case somebody doesn't know what... Yeah. When you say teaser, it's people think other stuff when you say teaser.
True,
so,
true that.
Yeah.
True that.
Is that what that's called, that part of the script?
I'm calling it that. It's more a TV term.
Yeah,
it's
that's
kinda
a TV
like,
it
wouldn't be
term.
Like a prologue?
The thing before the
it's
credits.
It's almost like a prologue.
Pre-credit sequence. Okay. You know, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Like that's when the TV theme would come up after that.
TV.
They would say Twilight Zone, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right. It's not an official term for sure.
Like you could literally see right after you see her face scream, you could see like, and then he's like over there and then he narrates it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But so we go from that to a setup of a family.
The family.
Crazy, likable.
Very relatable.
Yeah, lots of
the car
lots
scene.
Of humor. The car scene.
I feel like that's standard in horror movies. Yeah. The family driving to a house.
To a situation that's different than where they live. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Right. I mean, again, if we parallel it to Get Out, it's a vacation movie.
Yep,
it's
another
a trip
one.
To
it's
a place.
Trip movie.
Right? Yep.
And the trip happens very early. It happens within the setup. It's not the second act trip.
I liked that. We were already, we're arriving to the, almost allows us to like acclimate ourselves with the situation the way that they are.
That's right.
Like we're
That's
walking right. into the house and so they're gathering new information as they go.
Geography's important.
Yeah.
Not kind of being a little bit, it's not quite fish out of water, but you know, a new place.
Yeah. And they haven't been there in a year.
I always like movies, and Get Out probably didn't have this, but they were in motion. I like movies where we come into a scene where something's in motion.
Yeah.
Like a lot of new screenwriters that I read, it'll just be, okay, we wake up. It's an ordinary day.
Yeah.
Let's eat breakfast.
Well,
don't
start with waking up. That's like
the number
that's,
one.
No, number one rule, never do that.
You know, but you could almost see a scene like from a lesser screenplay where it is like they're all at the breakfast table.
Yep.
And it's like, hey, did
well,
you
Well, they
would have
just cut right to the table.
Cut right to the table.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And there's really nothing going on. So you're almost at a cold start.
Yeah.
Whereas at least if you're driving in the car, you're going somewhere. So the audience has to be interactive. We're trying to learn, where are they going? Who are these people?
Yep.
What's the dynamic?
Yep.
So all that stuff happens.
It's planting all these intrigue seeds.
Exactly.
Right.
There's a little bit of conflict even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't really want to go.
Yeah, and you can
she
tell.
She doesn't want to go to the
beach.
I feel like
this scene, the great writing in this scene is the other members of the family besides Lupita.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it actually sets them, all of them up.
All of them.
That's their time to be set up until we get. And then when we get there, it's like her time. You know what I mean?
Every little bit of information that
that's
you
given
learn,
yeah.
it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all like you, this is later in the Chekhov's gun, but you know, that she's a runner. He's got this magic trick that, like, you know, parallels the future monster's fire love. And the dad is envious of everything his friends have, and
he's trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Right, keeping up with the Joneses. So, and
her fear of the beach, or you know, all that
all
kind
these
of
things.
Stuff.
He's really good at Chekhov's gun. And if anyone doesn't know that, that theory is that if you show something,
Star Trek, right?
I think that
Chekhov's
fun. Yeah. If you show a gun, it's going to be used later.
That's,
I feel like Peele's really good at that.
Absolutely.
It's like everything has a purpose.
I mean, just how you're listing them, you know, go back to our Home Alone episode for the crazy beginning there. The same kind of stuff going on here.
Yeah. Just, every single moment, it seems like it's just there, but it's all purposeful.
And I brought
a movie referenced in this movie.
Right.
I brought up a theory about that. When we were talking about Home Alone, that somebody said to me once, that I'm not sure if I fully tested it in the lab, but it almost holds true, that everything is a setup or a payoff. So you only have so much room in these opening scenes. You get 3 minutes, 4 minutes tops.
Yep.
So everything has to pay off in some ways. So you have to find a way to not only do all these setups, but make them interesting and fun and do. So you have to set, not only are you setting up these items that will pay off later, like a gun, you know, like a Chekhov's gun, but you're setting up character arcs. You're setting up family dynamics. You're setting up character traits, like you said, that'll pay off, like the girl's a runner and things like that. All
the,
these things.
The closet door, the ambulance.
The closet door, the ambulance.
The face mask. Right.
And all these things come back.
So sometimes when you're writing, you write that stuff and then you... that's how you decide how to solve problems later. Like, this can be when you come up with these, it's hard to say when you're writing. Like, sometimes you free write and you write things and you find something that you came up with that's a solution to the problem in act three or act two. Other times you write to act two and you need solutions, so you go back to it and you plan them,
reverse engineer so it's motivated. It's,
I mean, you could come up with the end first and then just put them in the beginning.
Lots of strategies.
This case though, it all feels really intentional. The one thing I can say about Peele is intentional is the word I feel constantly when watching both these movies.
Very moment to moment.
Yes,
classic, you know, writing and stuff like that.
And they do a lot of rooting. I'm not gonna go down this giant list of rooting interest techniques that I use from a guy named David S. Freeman.
But, rooting for likable characters.
I mean, there's techniques that you just and you can continue the rooting interest techniques from page one to the end, but if you stack the rooting interest techniques on the front end, it makes us, no matter what they're doing, like them more.
Can you give us an example, like, of something he does here?
Put the hero in danger is something later, but we'll go to the
Jimmy
maternal.
Has a giant printed out book right now. I just want everyone to know.
Relates to kids, loving toward family, ethical, solving problems, feels pain, hides pain. She's hiding pain.
Right.
Artist or response to art. There's art all over the house.
Music, the beginning.
Music, exactly.
Yeah, I got five on it.
Music.
Yeah.
Later, she confesses a deep fear. Characters have powerful dreams or flashbacks. Funny, witty, which they are. You know, they're exchanging banter. Thoughtful, intelligent, underdog. This guy thinks he's an underdog. You know, he's like talking about. There's just so many. I mean, I could sit here and list them.
Yeah, you don't need to list all of them, but that definitely happens.
Yeah,
they're all.
I mean,
there.
They're all there in the first 10 pages. Right.
It's interesting because you hear like the term "the save the cat scene" or something like that. But a lot of these, you don't have to save a cat necessarily. Sometimes it's just enough to show somebody's lonely.
He made that movie.
What's that?
He made that movie.
Who made that movie?
Keanu. This actually is kind of his third movie, but yeah.
That's true.
Keanu, I
always forget that.
He didn't direct Keanu, but yeah.
Okay, so he's not as good as M. Night. Is that what you're talking about?
I love Keanu, so whatever, yeah.
That was his Unbreakable.
Right. It'll be more respected in years to come. Let's talk about secrets.
Oh, man.
Characters and secrets. Because this movie is chock full of them, I think.
Well, the funny thing about this, when I was watching it and this twist came up, and it's one of those twists that probably half the audience is probably going to sort of guess along the way, I would think.
Yeah. Did you guys?
I did. It didn't take it away. I mean, not that I'd say
I did halfway through.
The reason I guessed it is
I think it did a good job in giving us the evidence we needed or disprove it.
That's right.
It didn't cheat. I appreciated that.
It's kind of
a revelation.
This is more of a theory, but I think it's not meant to be this big revelation.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I think
it's meant to be figured out.
Right.
And that's what I think a lot of people don't understand about the concept of, like, these twists. Because a lot of times, like, people say, well, I figured it out. Well, I mean,
you're good. Better than the movie. Here's your medal.
I mean, every other movie without a twist, you figure out the ending, too. But you don't not like it.
Yeah.
Like, I knew they were going to blow up the Death Star in the end. Well, congratulations.
Well, to use language from our old episodes, the cheeseburgers. We already know how the cheeseburger movies are going to end because they're saving the cat. That doesn't ruin those movies.
Yeah. To me, learning, and it comes in later, learning that, figuring that secret out and then just kind of having evidence confirm that that's what the secret is, you could kind of see her transforming when she started to connect with it. Because I don't think she realizes, I don't know, personally, I don't think she comes to full realization of who she is until the end, and she's just having these moments that are kind of aligned with like the audience who's starting to understand the secret. And that is like when she starts seeing the shadow people die and she starts feeling empathy for them, there's like these slow moments where she's just looking and she's kind of like, wait, I think I am them. I think I'm one of them.
I think it's debatable that that is that or fear.
Fear.
Because she already knew. She already knows.
She already knows. Or she's next.
But that comes, don't you think that comes with the with how it's portrayed? How
yeah.
it's that written? Yeah.
Saying,
like,
yes,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like the fact that
That's
it's
in the
up
writing.
For debate, mm-hmm. keeping that question for
Left
the audience.
Right. Yep.
Is why it's good.
Yeah, agreed.
That's not why it's
bad.
That it's
not conclusive.
Like, I feel like yeah. some people would read that as bad.
No, I like that.
Yeah, what the audience knows versus what we know the characters know.
But the thing I was saying when I was watching this and I saw the secret and I kind of was thinking that this is going to be that secret in the end where she switched places. And I was thinking that very early on. And then I immediately thought to Jimmy, because Jimmy gets a lot of clients who had this problem. And I was like, this isn't that problem. But I was like, maybe he'd have the opportunity to talk about that.
To talk about
here.
This.
Because this is like the good version of that.
This is the great version
yeah.
of that.
Yes.
Because, and I think part of it is because it doesn't, you can almost take it away and it still works. Everything still works. But
like she doesn't need to have switched places for the movie to be good.
That's right. That's right.
So, right. Yeah. Yes. That's what we're saying.
Jimmy gets an example and I'll let Jimmy do some talking here. What's the example of a secret that doesn't work sometimes when you
okay oh god
put him on the spot.
No
you don't have to
gonna,
do a literal
no,
example
because I just have so many of yeah. them and I'm trying to do it in a way where I'm not disrespectful just, to what, a client who's listening but I'll so what I get a lot is a little different than this, but on the same level, like you said, this is a good version of that, which is mystery goals, which is, so I read a ton of scripts. I wrote nothing down on this. I read a ton of scripts where the entire movie, you don't know what they're trying to do. Like, it's like,
right.
we're going from scene to scene and there's just characters talking and they are trying to do something. They are trying to achieve a goal, but you don't know what it is. So, like from scene to scene, you're like, "What are we? What am I supposed to be rooting for to occur?"
Right,
but it
right.
just keeps going, and it keeps going. And then on the last page, it's revealed. Well, this was my goal. They achieve the goal on the last page, and it's like, "Well, this is what we've been trying to do the whole time." You're like, "What?" So that's a very different version of what this is. And I think the reason that this works is, I'll say this, a lesser version of this would not let you know that she was trying to protect her family, as weird as that sounds. Her this works because whether she knows that she's really
right.
the shadow
she's
person
still
or not,
trying to protect them,
everything she's yeah. doing is honest to us. Every
right.
every action she's taking, everything she's doing is honest. We just learn that the meaning behind it is different.
Right.
So,
and even then with the twist, it's not like the twist isn't she's evil.
No.
The twist is she still loves her family.
Yeah.
And still was trying to protect them. She just happens to be the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I was going to say. So I even heard an interview, I think after Get Out, with Jordan Peele, and he said, you know, one of his biggest things, he said one of the biggest magics of cinema, and we talk about this all the time, and I think his quote was to bring the audience into the protagonist's eyes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So when you have this secret, that can be tricky, because the number one fuel of a movie is you are the hero, in this case, you are her, and you are feeling the tension that
yep.
she's feeling and you empathize with that. So all the rootability things and stuff, the goal of, you know, the best way to make, I wouldn't say the best, but the easiest way, the most powerful way, the most common way maybe is the best way, is to put us in the protagonist's eyes and let us feel their fears, hope their hopes. But if you have a secret and nobody knows what it is, and the goal is based on that secret,
it's tough.
That's a problem. However, the way Bob just described it is exactly why this works. We don't need to know that additional part. That just
right.
adds a wrinkle
yeah.
to it. We are worried that she's going to die. Her kids are going to die. We're
right.
with her on the survival mission.
Yep, we are completely aligned with the action she's taking. Right. And that's what
matters. I'd even argue that after the twist is announced to the viewer, you could still in your mind say, well, if I was that tethered, I probably would have done the
same
thing.
You can relate to
it. Like, you know what I mean? There's some relatable, it's like still relatable.
And that's intentional. That's in the construction.
Yeah.
I agree.
But
yeah.
So I'm just trying to.
This is your chance.
Oh my God, this is my chance. I know.
Shine, Jimmy, shine.
I'm not taking advantage of it at all. Because I have so many great examples, but I don't want to be offensive to my clients.
We're not asking you to be offensive. Please don't.
Like, okay, I think unreliable narrators, you can have a fake goal. That's like the one thing, but it's motivated to the premise itself. Mm-hmm. You know, but
it's almost
instance,
like they're telling a story. They right. still have to tell an effective story, but their story's a lie.
Right, and that's
well,
for
that's
instance Kaiser
here,
Soze, the usual suspects.
Yeah.
Right. His goal is the same whether we know the true or false story that he's telling. His goal is to leave that interrogation not in jail,
right?
So
right.
it stays the same. It's an honest goal, and we're aligned with it the whole time. But it's a fake goal.
But he's
it's
a different character.
He's different. Right. The reality right. of what that goal means, right? So,
I mean, it's
for instance, I'll give you an example.
Ahead.
I read a script, and the entire time this character was basically just trying to help her friend deal drugs, and then in the end it turned out of nowhere, the last scene was that she was training for a role in a movie that was never mentioned for 99 pages, and then on page 100, she was an actress in a movie playing a drug dealer.
So it felt cheap.
So it was like none of it mattered. We never understood that everything that was being done was in an effort to be better at mm-hmm. being an actor in a movie. Like, you didn't know she was an actress. And then on the last page, it's like you learned that she was doing all of this to be an actor in a movie. So, like, it just is. I read scripts like that all the time.
Yeah. I know you guys love terms, but maybe that something like that should be what we call a twist, and then something like this should be what we call a reveal.
Could be.
That's a good
I'm
way
trying
to call
to make,
it. Yeah, yeah.
You guys always like the terms, but like there needs to be a separation there because I don't feel like this applies to the word twist.
Yeah.
Like that does.
Yeah.
That's
just,
like
mystery
never,
goals.
You know,
I just
left field.
You know, though, here's where I would debate you on that.
Oh, go ahead. I'm just trying to give it terms,
fun.
Jamie. I'm just trying to give it terms.
No, I like your term, but
I'm feeling really guilty right now.
Yeah, I didn't want to put you on the spot with that, but I knew it
was
a
that
good topic.
I mean, they're not good.
That wasn't exactly. I paraphrased it.
So
you just gave him some free advice. Go ahead.
Reveal versus twist. I'm not sure in this movie, even though I guessed, quote unquote, the reveal and
right,
the twist.
Right.
I'm not sure that I expected it to be revealed or needed it to be revealed. I think this movie could have ended without it. And for that reason, I think it might be a twist. Where I think reveal is the inevitable conclusion that we are
expecting already.
We're asking ourselves, who is she? Is she?
Yeah.
And I don't think this movie has
no.
that. So that's the
no.
difference, I'd say.
Yes.
I'll agree there. I'll agree there. Yes.
So I like your term.
It's not
yeah.
being pressed
this
the whole time who she
yeah.
is
yeah.
until we get down to yeah. the bunker.
And it all that's not to say it doesn't all work.
No,
that,
it totally works.
That's not to
yeah.
say I don't love twists. But I think that's.
We're just working on the terms
yeah,
right
yeah,
now.
It's a term.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have a term for
we're
it.
Playing
yeah.
the semantics.
I just yeah, don't yeah. like miss. I think that for the most part, the audience needs to be aligned with what the character is doing. We need to know what they're trying to do. The meaning behind it.
Which we
means
are
less.
With both Red and Adelaide
yes,
the whole
the
time.
Whole time.
Both
and
of them.
And that's why it works.
Strangely enough, though, I think your example could work in the same way us
I
works.
I agree.
If we follow that goal through the whole thing and we sort of buy into it. You know what I mean? The drug
yeah.
dealing aspect.
Yeah.
Like
there was no end game. Or stakes.
I'm not saying it would be a great reveal yeah. to say then I'm a movie actor, but
yeah.
I'm not sure that adds
yeah,
to it the
yeah.
way this movie it adds
yeah.
to it and makes you look at it
yeah.
a second time.
Yeah.
But I think it could work so long as the goal we thought was there took us in an emotional journey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
how in Us, it's like so they can be free from their tethered.
That's
yeah.
right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
that's an emotional journey, yeah. whereas that is just by the way, I was just
by the
doing,
way.
I was just doing a part in a movie.
Yeah.
It's all fake. It was all a dream. Bye.
Yeah, yeah, right. It was essentially that.
It's all
a
dream. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, we got
good
two,
discussion.
We got,
at
yeah,
least.
We got two new terms out of that. structure.
Yeah. Well, we
I feel talked, we I feel like we kind of got
talked
some
about
of
setup. The only thing I wanted to say, this movie, unlike Get Out, so I did a lot of comparison when I was sitting there watching this and Get Out. I just they felt like
which I
written,
don't think he's trying. To
no,
do,
not at all. It's a style.
Yeah,
thing.
It's a style.
No,
thing.
I, yeah. I'm just getting a read on the artist.
Right.
Yeah, the
artist,
style.
Right.
Yeah, the voice.
Just like I might watch a Tarantino film and say he likes to jump around in time a lot.
He likes
you
feet.
Know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. This is a. No, that's. I think that's Nickelodeon. There's somebody.
oh God.
Yes,
there's something like that.
Dan Snyder.
Somebody or anyway.
Anyway. Us.
So what were we talking about? No, so in this movie, unlike Get Out, Get Out was a slow burn movie that really. It took a while to even get to like the horror, the survival. There's not a lot of strong goals the hero has until like the midpoint when things close in.
Yeah, exactly.
This movie isn't that way at all. Even though, like you said, there are some people that say it's a little slow and stuff. The opening's a little slow. Like the lock-in, the break into two is a little slow. Like,
yeah.
I'm not sure what I'd call the catalyst. I think it's them showing up in the driveway.
Yeah,
and that happens
you could
a little
argue
late.
With it. It's, yeah.
That happens a little late. And then the lock-in is kind of when they're locked in and they're trapped and they're handcuffed and all that stuff. And it's like, let's play the game.
Yeah.
And then we're locked in. And that's the movie we came to see.
Exactly.
Kind of the survival
and that,
movie.
That whole sequence
that
is weirdly
defines
fun
the story
games.
Question.
It is. It
that
is.
That whole sequence where they, when they first like, when you know, when she runs away.
They're playing funny games.
They're literally, the boys
fun
are,
and games.
The boys are literally playing fun and games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I
it's true.
Yeah.
Unlike Get Out, where I could even argue, I wouldn't argue, but I could argue that it has like a 60-minute first act, and a 10-minute, you know, or something. It has this crazy kind of slow
it's
burn.
It's very
structure.
Undefined where it turns into Act Two. On we talked about that in the first podcast. We had a hard time easily saying what's the lock-in moment in
that's
that
right.
story.
That's right. And I've heard
can you give a little definition of a lock-in
yeah,
moment
Jamie,
for the audience?
Oh, yeah, sure. So usually, like, the break into two. So when you
Act Two?
Yeah, when you change from Act One to Act Two, there's usually some moment that locks the hero into a goal against an obstacle with stakes.
It essentially defines the premise.
Yeah, it locks in, so to speak, your log line.
Yeah.
You know, if you have one of these nicely written goal
well,
obstacle
that would be
stakes.
The driveway then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's when it all.
That's when it's
the point of no return is right
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
so the
yeah.
hero has
exactly.
a goal.
Yes. That, without question.
The hero has a goal to survive. The obstacle is the people trying to kill them. The stakes, life and death, were locked into the movie.
Yeah.
That's the break into two in most movies.
Yeah. Is Marty going to get back to the future?
Is Marty going to get back to the future? Yeah. Is Indiana Jones going to get the Lost Ark before time runs out?
It's
whatever
like
it
this, the story question is clearly defined at that moment, and the rest of the focus remains in an effort to answer that overall
can
story
Dorothy
question.
Find a way home? All these things.
Yeah.
So once we get to that point where you can say, oh, this is what the movie's about. It's about a family trying to survive these killers who
these
have showed up.
Well, two questions.
Doppelganger killers.
Will they survive, and who are the doppelgangers?
True. Yeah, there's
true. Why. There's
yeah,
the why
yeah,
of them.
Yeah.
I think is a very
the whys. Yeah.
Like other than some horror movies, the why of these killers
the,
is
the why.
Really
the why
intriguing.
Is important to us
absolutely.
As the audience.
Yeah.
But the immediate goal.
The immediate
for them
goal is survival.
Survival.
Yeah.
Or escape.
Yeah. Exactly.
Escape or survival. Right.
So, and I think that's
I think
the
it's
big...
got a. I understand what you're saying. It's a way cleaner. Break
it's
into
way cleaner.
Two, then
and,
Get Out.
And then even on top of it, like in Get Out, the midpoint probably happens when things, you know, the auction or
it's
something
it's when he
like
says,
that.
Get out, get out.
Yeah, get out.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's literally the title. The titular line.
In this movie, the midpoint, it's a classic like escalation of stakes. My call for the midpoint is like when they go to when the neighbors show up.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger than just them.
Yeah.
It's more than just one family. Yeah. Clear escalation.
Not only is it as bad as I thought, it's worse.
It's worse.
That's usually and
when
either,
pretty much right when the girls get stabbed.
Yep.
In the neck.
And it either
right.
Oftentimes and I don't think this is any different. The midpoint either offers you a false victory or a false defeat, and here's a false defeat. You know.
Yeah. Well, no. It depends where you put it, but I could almost see the false victory be we escaped.
Oh, it's a good
and
call.
And then immediately, you know, after they escape,
they are usually two parters.
Yeah.
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 And then all of a sudden, no, it's all over. You know, That's one I've used, I think, before in one of, in several of my scripts. The it's all over. You know, we escaped the house, but the haunting is all, the monsters are everywhere. That's
so
a pretty common.
Is movement. All is lost here? Is it the, when the son is kidnapped?
Usually that is in All is Lost, and I think so. I think
yeah,
it's
yeah.
When
I mean, I'm
when
trying to think what
the,
other
the
would
fire
be that.
Scene in the parking lot.
Well,
yeah.
When he's grabbed.
Grabbed. Yeah.
When he's
yeah.
grabbed.
Yeah.
There,
right.
There's not a huge Dark Night of the Soul because they basically just go on the rescue mission. I so think
the whole
no
thing time. Is a Dark Night
yeah.
of the Soul.
Yeah. 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 Right. Right.
So yeah, but usually, almost All is Lost. Whenever there's like a kid kidnapped or something, you know, Lethal Weapon. It gets
right,
personal.
Right, right.
They kidnapped my kid yeah, or something. Yeah. That's usually the All is Lost moment.
There's just no other moment I could think that could fit
yeah.
All is
that's
Lost.
The one I, that's the yeah. one I flagged when I was watching.
You may
right.
never get him back. Yeah.
Right. And only she yeah. can get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the dad has to stay with the
she
daughter.
She has to
so.
Go to the dungeon to rescue, on
yeah.
the rescue
right.
mission.
Right.
You know?
Subterranean.
It's funny. The whole movie, I was like, this is going to prove one of my things I always say. And then it didn't really. They kind of subverted it.
Okay.
So I have a law. That mirror mazes are where people go to die, but she didn't. She well, she
okay.
went there. Like that's one of my irrefutable laws of filmmaking. But then then she kind of went down the basement of the mirror maze. So it was kind of a half mirror maze.
Yeah.
Where
okay.
people go to die.
Okay.
I mean, mirror mazes are cinematic. They but, have their history.
Yeah. The yeah. second I saw the mirror maze,
for this.
Right, right.
The second I saw the mirror maze in the beginning, I was like, well, here's Act
Ooh.
Three. Let's test my theory.
The one thing, can I, this, I don't know if this is probably in the script, but the one thing I thought was interesting was when Adelaide goes to save her son, when she goes to the haunted house, or not the mirror maze,
yeah,
sorry.
The mirror maze.
Kind of, right.
Might as well be.
The newly gentrified mirror maze that's now a wizard instead of an Indian.
Right. I like that idea.
I, yeah,
the
no,
Harry
I mean,
Potter,
yeah, I think it's
with the change in
Harry
time.
Potter
part,
vacation.
Yeah.
Part of our dark past that we hid.
It was a
right?
subtle detail they didn't call out.
Yeah.
The owl pops out and she smashes it. But then when if looking back the second time I watched it, I was like, well, the first time we see it, it's not her that gets scared by the owl.
Yeah, but it's just a primal reaction,
I know,
but you're right.
I know, but I was like, I thought what was great was the audience reacts as though she is getting revenge
like,
for when it scared
right
her as a kid.
Last time, but it's not really
it's
her.
It's not really that.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
not really that at all. So
yeah.
I thought that was kind of a genius yeah. little...
I learned some things when I was reading some things when I got home last night that there's like Native American supernatural lore in that mirror maze stuff in the first half because, you know, it's the shaman's vision.
Yeah.
Whistling in the dark is like a big no-no in Native American culture, and it's supposedly
really?
Calls upon evil spirits. So when she whistles and then the spirit whistles back, that's like an answer to the, like she's in a Native American shaman quest. And then in Native American culture, an owl is like a harbinger of doom, like of death. So it's like a symbol of death. Both of those things I thought were really cool, nice little added touches that I didn't know watching the movie. It's cool.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome.
Another setup and payoff we didn't mention that I thought that I read about last night, which I can't believe I didn't think about, was the gloves. Which was with her T-shirt.
Oh yeah! Oh, yeah.
I,
shit,
like, I, how did I not think of that? Like the fact
like
that they're all wearing
the
one
T-shirt,
right,
yeah,
one glove. Oh. Eh. Right? Yeah,
that.
It's like a
nice
it's
little
genius.
Touch.
It's the little touches.
The little touches.
Yeah. Let's talk about horror movies and how much to explain.
That, by the way, that one glove thing could have been risky. This, you know, it could have that movie could have been canceled when
yeah,
I saw
the.
Geez, that was obviously filmed before the documentary.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter nowadays. What are you kidding?
Yeah. I know. 1986. It's, yeah.
I was going to
no,
start
saying,
a Twitter
I'm
boycott.
On Jamie's side, people would be like, "F this movie."
You know, I'm just, still, you wouldn't want to. I would want to wear one of those tethered versions of the shirt that is like the Michael shirt, but it's all it's just shaped. that the girl
I love
was wearing.
That. Yeah,
I thought that'd be
was,
such a cool
yeah,
shirt
creepy,
to own. Right, but let's talk about how much to explain because this movie does have like a speech in it,
and it's another thing that I see that happened in Get Out. That's happening
right,
here.
No,
right?
It's stylistic.
Let's have we're at the 75-minute mark or something. Let's
right.
have a little talk. Now this
but
one came a little
think,
later.
Jamie, like this would be something that people will call lazy, but it I would say if we look back at Get Out, it almost seems it's intentional. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not lazy. There's a reason.
So
yeah.
I was of two minds for this. So by the way, I thought this movie totally worked for me.
Me too.
Oh. If, I'd see it
yeah.
again.
I didn't know that we haven't said that.
We haven't said our review. Well, not a review show, technically. But I loved it.
So far, probably my favorite movie of this year. It's early. I haven't seen too many.
I mean, it's going to be my favorite horror movie, hands down. I can't see anything replacing that.
There's one other I can't talk about, but I'll tell you guys off air.
Jamie's in the know.
Yeah, there's one. I'm
Mr.
finally
Nickelodeon over here.
Exactly. So this is probably the one spot I debated whether I like this. Of course, you need it for the things that come later, maybe the twist and stuff. Maybe you need it. Mm-hmm. But here's the reason I debate it. I debate this side. This is somewhere when I rate horror movies, I fall into these two camps. Like, should I just have a scene that tells everything and explains it all?
James Bond villain.
Yeah, should I do that? Or should I not? You know, and I, of course, working with Blair Witch guys, they're kind of guys that prefer the let's not tell. You know, let's hide some of these things. Let's keep it a little, let's keep our flashlight a little flickery and not show all the, not that this told everything, but it kind of tells most of it.
Yeah.
It's a broad stroke explanation.
It is.
Well said.
Yeah. So I will say, after years of working with the studios, you're better off, I'm almost going to suggest, if you're a spec screenwriter, you're probably better off doing this version than the other, than
the explanation version.
The explanation version. If you go through a development process, you will have at least one draft that has this version. It'll be like, stop the movie. I'm going to give a speech for 10 minutes.
The Matrix Reloaded architect. telling you everything.
I personally am not sure. I almost prefer movies that half step it back, that tell you a little bit, but not enough.
Yeah.
And this movie especially was that, because once they told me that, I started debating it. I started coming up with the tweaks. I would have never done that had they not sat down and gave me the full explanation. If they would have just left a little bit on the playing field.
You could almost live with the text at the beginning.
Yep.
That's right. That there's tunnels all over the United States. Okay. They come from that.
I even felt, to an extent, it felt a little redundant at times. Like, did I need to know about the rabbits again? Did I need to know about this?
Yeah.
I think it was more visual, though.
I like the visual.
That's the visual of the rabbits.
I like the visuals of the people underneath the ground and all that stuff.
It's creepy.
So it gave us that. Maybe that's what he's going for. Maybe he really wanted to show that kind of, it was almost...
Gave him an opportunity.
Weirdly funny.
That's where the filmmaking overtakes the script a bit. Yeah.
But agreed.
It's the one spot that, so I guess my advice has, you know, if you're writing spec screenplays, you probably want to do this. Even though your instinct might say don't do it, you probably do want to get splainy with it. But if you're making your own movie, maybe you don't. I don't know. I'm more on the side. I'm of the camp that I like when you half step it. You don't go all the way.
Just a little bit.
I feel like this is just a little bit, though. I think it overstepped
it ever so slightly.
Yeah, if there were 10 steps, I think it might have went to 8, and I wish it went to 7.
So,
okay.
You know,
okay.
That's what I'm
so
saying. You didn't go all the way to 10.
I got two comments on this. One thing is, she doesn't actually say, she says, I believe they did this. So she doesn't, she's speculating.
Oh, that's a good catch. Yeah.
And
she also isn't a clone.
She says, I believe.
She also isn't a clone.
Right.
Remember? So she's
right.
Only talking from what she could gather.
She's talking from what she gathered.
Right.
Which I think absolves it of a lot
of
the debate.
That's why
she
can't
doesn't
make
know.
Sense.
She's explaining what she knows. The only thing that she knows is the plan, which she tells it. And I think it was fine. It was serviceable. I called this serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it did the job. I think it did the job a little too much, like you said, and it didn't need to try to over-explain. See Robert Cargill, is that how he wrote Doctor Strange.
Right.
He was on Ain't It Cool News for
Awesome Twitter guy.
Love this guy. He pointed this out, and so I just this was inspired by him. He said that this movie relies on nightmare logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never heard that term, and as soon as I heard it,
kind of like dream logic.
Yeah, it's on the same line.
The dark side.
So as soon as he brought that up, I started researching it before I'd even seen the movie. So that was easy for me to be like, oh, well, it's operating on this.
Okay.
And so you asked, like, how much to explain in the horror movie. Well, for this one, like, it depends on the source of the threat for me. Like, if it's motivated that it's you can explain it, then you should explain it. If it defies explanation, which I think this does... I think it defies explanation. So nightmare logic is like it follows, and The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
These things could never exist. Never, right? Freddy could never exist.
Right.
Freddy operates under nightmare logic. So no matter what your explanation.
So nightmare logic is kind of just logic.
And there's a Nightmare on Elm Street tape in the opening scene. It's one of the tapes. I mean,
right.
His influences, he's like, here's my influences. There's like six
Chud,
tapes.
Goonies, Chud, The Man with Two
Goonies,
Brains.
The Man with Two Brains, Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, these are all intentional in there. So I think he hit the nail on the head, Robert Cargo. So it basically is horror elements aren't meant to make sense, right? They are not. You can't make sense of them. And it is horror elements. They explore our nightmares about our fears fully
mm-hmm.
realized.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually explore a real thing, right?
Right.
With this one, I think that absolves it of needing to explain it. Like, I think if he hadn't explained it, it would have been fine.
It would have also been fine.
Yeah.
I think I like the construction of that scene, hence
yeah.
why I like
yeah,
the explanation.
Yeah, I like the scene.
No,
but if we just saw the tunnels and we mm-hmm. saw them mimicking,
yeah.
I think the reason for that is we need to see the mimicking.
Yeah. Right.
Which we don't see.
You're right.
The function it serves is that we get to see the montage of them all acting out the carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And we got it, and then you assume
it
that it's happening
that.
All over the United States
yep.
to you, even. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
it kind of gives us a fully realized answer. Right.
Where else would he put that?
That's a good call.
If it weren't there,
that's a good call.
Right.
But
so it does serve a function. It's not useless.
He may not have needed to say anything.
Just to give an example
at all to do that.
Maybe people have figured this stuff out. I haven't done a deep dive on the explanations.
Yeah.
But like when I saw that, then I was like, well, they drove in a car. Where did they come from? Did all the people get in a car and mimic them?
Underground?
Right.
Yeah.
Now you ask yourself all these questions.
All those questions started to come into play that didn't come because I was going by nightmare logic.
Yeah.
And I suddenly felt like we stepped out of the nightmare.
Absolutely. And that's why I think the explanation, it kind of breaks that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It like you said, it takes us out. Oh, like it doesn't have to make sense, and all of a sudden they start trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And we go, well, shit.
Right.
Now that you're telling me it could make sense, I don't buy it as much. It worked for me. I didn't have any issues with it at all, but I hear what you're saying.
But instantly, that's what I thought of. I started to say, well, they got here in a car and they were
like
underground.
Like you're saying, do the tethered travel to where they used to live?
Did they get in a car?
Right,
logic.
Now they're geographically in the same place because they were at the at the carnival or
is
whatever.
It weird that part of me feels like he wants you to do that?
I don't know.
I don't have an answer for that.
So,
but
it was the only part of the movie where I was that part of my brain clicked in.
Yeah.
And
wait a minute.
I kind of lost it for a few seconds and then I got back into it and I was like,
once she starts dance fighting, you're like, okay.
It
doesn't matter.
That's
okay.
The other sense.
Yeah, right.
So I would say, like, as a teaching example, like, I would say proceed with caution with the nightmare logic and just anything goes.
You kind of need to have a master filmmaker's hand if you're going to do it.
Sometimes it's just an excuse for laziness.
Exactly.
That's the reality.
And that's the danger of using
it. Which we're not saying here.
No, not at all.
No.
And in fact, like I would argue that the best uses of nightmare logic have rules. Like Freddy, It Follows has rules.
Yeah.
Even though it could never exist, it still has rules, right? And this one does.
Internal logic.
Internal rules for the magic.
Yeah.
This one has one that I noticed, which is, and it's loose. So, but it does have a rule, and that is the person above ground has a tethered doppelganger below. And from what I can tell from the one, and I didn't read this, but this is just what it seemed like to me, is whoever is above ground controls the soul, right? So she used to have no soul, our Adelaide that we're following. And I think where she gained the soul is when she started dancing. Like, I think the very moment,
mm-hmm.
this is not a theory. I mean, I guess it is a theory. I'm not trying to make this a theory podcast.
Right.
But I think the rule is there's two bodies, but only one gets to have the soul, and whoever is on top gets the soul. And then the dancing is what made the revolution underground, but I also think the dancing is where she lost her soul underground.
Right.
Like, that was her last moment, and she just became like the rest of them. But I don't know. I think that's the rule.
I wouldn't totally disagree with that. The dancing, there's a reason it's punctuated right
there.
Yeah,
it's punctuated.
I mean,
it was like, yeah, that.
She says it's the dancing.
Because everybody
underground
suddenly saw what it looked like to have a soul.
Right.
Because to me, I think the goal of this movie,
I, The only reason I, and maybe we could jump into this because I think you're about to say it.
Yeah.
The thematic.
The themes. The theme. Yeah.
No, it's a good transition to theme.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Because the only thing I would say, like the one thing, a lot of times what happens when there are twist endings is sometimes the theme gets jettisoned, right? But in this one, the theme, if you think about it, you're wondering if it actually adds to it.
The twist informs the theme.
The twist informs the theme.
Right.
Because there's certainly a fear of the others kind of thing going on. I think I've heard Jordan Peele say
that. He said, if there were us, then there has to be others.
There has to be others.
Yes, that's what he said several times.
Others can be anything.
Love that.
Yeah, it can be literally anything.
It can be race, immigration, rich, poor.
He specifically said several times this is not about race, too. I think he really wanted everyone to know that.
There's nothing about it that specifically strikes me as race. No. You can apply your other to this and then make a debate about it. And the only thing I'd say... So then you have this thing, the fear of the others, and I actually saw like a website that's saying this is an anti. It was like a right wing website. This is an anti-socialist message. They were saying Jordan Peele makes an anti-socialist statement because the others.
Incredible.
Look how dangerous.
Of course.
Look how dangerous the others are, and they come and kill to try to kill us, and we should. I don't know. That was the whole thing.
I actually felt bad for the shadow people.
Absolutely, but it makes us look evil to an extent, like we're the ones that don't care, which I think it is. It's supposed to be self-reflection, not evil. That might be strong.
He's also said that every action that we make in our lives, like now, it also is possibly hurting someone.
Yes.
And that was like the theme. That's sort of the theme. It's like your actions have consequences on others.
I think it was like, you know, the last season of The Good Place, for example. Like, it was hard for... Nobody could get to heaven any... Maybe that's a spoiler. Sorry. but basically, lives are complicated. We're all sinning, even though we're doing good things in our life.
Be a good people. Just, you can be a good person and do horrible things.
Just drinking your plastic water bottle.
Killing a whale.
Yeah, exactly.
Later.
So I think there's some of that in here. But so then you say, well, what about the twist? How does that factor in? And I think the twist factors in... I was trying to figure that out, but I think it is kind of that nature versus nurture thing,
mm-hmm.
where they're the same as us, just different circumstances. And if we switch their circumstances, if one person is born into some horrible situation, they could become a killer, versus if one person's born into a privileged situation.
The second I walked out of this movie, the first thing I thought about was Trading Places, the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like literally.
Yeah.
Like that was, I'm surprised that wasn't one of the VHS.
No, that's,
I know.
I really am. Yeah.
You should have put the two old men in there.
Right.
On the tape.
Right.
But yeah, so I think in this case it does, the twist does inform
the theme. Yeah.
Overall.
Nature versus nurture, that's who gets the soul.
I think
right?
And I think I think it's a lot about, I think what I brought out of it was it's gratitude versus envy, because there's a lot of premise delivery that deals with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they put so much emphasis on Gabe's envy. And he's the one that
like a tethered of Tim Heidecker.
Exactly.
We
haven't even talked about the White family, which is kind of the B story informing the theme.
The
kooky girls doing handsprings out of nowhere and flips and stuff, you know? Gymnastics, random gymnastics.
But it's a great parallel to how the shadow people feel about our main family.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's like, that's just premise delivery right there. Like, right? It's great. And it's like an easy way for us to kind of like see it through our hero's eyes, what the shadow people are feeling, what specifically Gabe. And I loved that Gabe ended up killing the man that he envied, you know, just like...
Oh, like, yeah, it's perfect. I mean,
perfect.
Obviously.
Yeah, no, yeah, I just perfect. Loved that, though. I mean, I appreciated the writing. But yeah, to me, it was saying, like, appreciate what you have and don't forget about the people who don't have what you have, because these people are forgotten. And that's like what creates all of their issues.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I think we're all on the same page.
I don't think
there's that much to unpack. I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I think it's like, I think it's like They Live level blunt.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, really. It's so
whenever
blunt.
I hear these things like the mysteries and blah, blah, I don't think there's that much to unpack. Yeah. I think it's pretty easy to see.
I think there's lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
with the, you know, with the clues and stuff, but when it's pretty blunt.
I think it's pretty blunt too.
Yeah. So you don't believe the anti-socialist message?
No, I
people
sadly
are
do
seeing
not.
Things where they want.
I kind of like how this one, like you say, it's not about race. It is enough vagued up that you can apply certain other, you
but
know, your other.
It's not about race, situation. But it's also like while it's also like we talked about the, you can be a sinner without sinning. Mm-hmm. It's also about hiding our past. You know, these things.
Yeah.
That, like, the We Are Americans line.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, it's us so pushing the past away, and it's a reflection of who we are, and we don't want to look at it, we don't want to see it, and it's going to come back to kill us.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tight.
It is tight.
Yeah, and I mean that, like, writing, not like, it's tight. Right. Is there anything else we need to talk about with this?
I think we hit all the other
without
stuff.
Getting into theories about socialism.
Yeah, we haven't been doing the theories. I'm glad we haven't been
Well,
doing.
Theories,
yeah,
that's on our
different.
Podcast.
Yeah.
We're not, yeah, we could.
Yeah, I think we touched on it all. I wanted to get your thoughts because you, I don't see it on the list that I printed out, but I could have sworn one of you guys was asking about his attention to detail.
Oh, yeah. It was
we
snuck
just skipped
in
over
here.
It. I missed it.
Yeah.
I think
what do you guys think about, okay, because like for instance I'll give an example and I'll argue why it's not, it's kind of a who cares.
Okay,
I think a lot of these things that people go back and like and explore are nothing. They're just kind of like a simple little, they almost function for me as like a joke. They're like a theme gag.
He is a comedian.
Right? But they're not to be laughing about.
No,
but it's
no,
like
but
they have the same emphasis as a joke. Like you don't think about it after it happens, but you go, oh, cool. Okay. In the background, every single scene is filled with one or two of these things that people go, what does it mean? What's the deep meaning behind it? And there's like a YouTube video just about this one thing.
Right.
It means nothing.
He's wearing a Jaws shirt.
It's thematically related. It's part of the whole.
There's some of him just, he loves being a filmmaker and he wants to make his film look and sound like he wants it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not necessarily everything means something.
Right.
I know.
But I'll give you an example. Sorry, the background, when he's saying, watching the baseball game.
Yeah.
The baseball game is the San Francisco Giants are playing the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, right.
And the score is tied 11-11.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That doesn't mean anything. It's just a gag. But you'll have
the fact that it's like the Bible verse.
Right. It doesn't have a deeper meaning to it. And I would argue that it doesn't make the story better. But you'll hear endless people saying that these are the things that make this a deep movie. And what do you guys think about those elements from a writing standpoint? Do you think they're necessary? Do you think you should do it?
No, I think that's the very nature of unnecessary, but it's...
That's what I'm asking.
Well, no, those things are what make us go, this guy cares.
Yeah.
It's not like they're necessary.
There's an appreciation. Absolutely. I appreciate it.
No, it's not necessary, but it's like... He's not only having fun, he's in total control, and he has the mind to add those things where he doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to make a decision about these things for some reason or another. Like somebody's going to ask you, well, who's the baseball team on TV?
Right.
So he's just, it's informed by whatever decision.
Like
you
if
make.
You saw this in a student script and like every single moment on the page, if they aspired to be like this, what would you tell them?
You know, it can be too on the nose.
That's
and
what
it
I'm
can
saying.
Be distracting. Like,
it's distracting.
I know. There was a time when I was writing with somebody and they always liked to give funny names to characters. Like let's say they were named after famous presidents and they were sneaking like,
right, you know,
this one is this, you know, it's George and Abraham and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, well, when somebody reads this, they're going to be, you know, it wasn't a
distracted,
comedy. It's like just serious, but you just decided your rule.
It's
was
not meta.
Be,
so
yeah, it wasn't meta. Yeah, yeah. It's becoming meta and it's not. And it's like a mess. So I think you have to be careful with
that's
it.
Why I'm bringing this up, well, because I'm going to go back to my concerns with the Hereditary thing, right? Like when a movie like this blows up, the first thing that people who are new writers want to do is emulate the things they love.
Right.
And so there's going to be hundreds of scripts written where line by beat by
Jimmy's
beat,
trying to make
image,
his job easier.
Image by image, it's like the clock is 11-11 and blah, blah. And
right.
It's going to be, I think it's, it could be detrimental to your story.
But it's not to this one.
Not to this one at all.
No.
Not at all.
No, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, so I'd say proceed with caution.
Also, a lot of that stuff, I haven't read the script, the actual script to us.
I looked for it. I didn't see it.
I got to imagine a lot of this stuff is like...
Production design.
Exactly. And not in the script.
Post that
he
game
might not
and that
even
television.
Have come up with it.
They could have, you know, they could have put that stuff on the television and that announcer in post.
Yeah,
like it's not.
I agree with you.
You know what I mean? Like it might not be in the script. Like
so,
that.
I wanted to pose the question about it from a writing standpoint.
I do fear that because I've been part of that. I've been, you know, I've been in scripts that have done that, and it's a little silly. It takes people out, and they don't. It can script the tone of your script. Like if you want it totally serious, and there's all these little inside wink winks. However,
but I feel like the opening VHS tapes were intentional.
Absolutely. No, so there's a line.
There's a line.
I would also say Jordan Peele is, I call him kind of M. Night with a sense of humor.
He's
sitting, he has this sense of humor that
he's
winking at you.
He's playing
the
with the audience.
We're
man.
Having a good time when we're watching his movies. It's not like dead serious.
He's also a cinephile of the highest order.
Yeah.
Like the highest order.
If Christopher Nolan was doing it, it might be a little weird.
Because he doesn't do that. What the heck? Because he doesn't do that. But
his movie might be a little different.
Jordan Peele's a horror geek. Yeah. He's a movie geek.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he is, to some degree, playing with
the
genre.
The
playful.
Tarantino's
playful.
Tarantino does the same
thing.
Like, the Copper Pots fast food restaurant, that was hilarious. I loved that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to do as... his style and the way he views this.
I just wanted to bring it up because
he begged Spielberg for a Jaws shirt. There's a reason.
Yeah.
Because he's making a movie and he gets to put a Jaws shirt in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And plus that scene at the beach. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a mimicry of tone and everything. Yeah. I mean, but it's not, what if that kid wasn't wearing a Jaws shirt, would it make the script or movie worse? No.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think that would affect my viewing of this movie if that Jaws shirt wasn't there. Yeah. But.
Well, if it was the Meg, it might.
then it'd be time appropriate, though.
That's right.
Does anybody wear the Meg shirt? I've never
we'll get you a Meg shirt, Jamie.
Somebody send one in.
Oh, man.
Send in a Meg shirt. Yeah.
We got a slightly growing audience. You never know.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Venmo it to me.
Says the guy wearing a shirt that he of a movie he wrote.
I love that. He's wearing the band shirt, dude.
Yeah.
Jamie's
wearing
love
a lovely
that, Jamie.
Molly shirt.
That's right. 10-year-old.
Anyway, thanks. I thought that was worth discussing.
No, it is. It totally is. I think it's more filmmaking than it is writing.
It's
though.
Ever present.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder how much of it was in the script. And you also have to wonder if it was all in the script, would have been as. You're in the hands of a guy who knows what the hell he's doing. Is essentially why it works.
I think you said it on the Hereditary episode when you were talking to prospective filmmakers, like, dude, you're not Jordan Peele. Until you become on that level, don't act like you are type of thing, right?
Just my concern. Right. I just am concerned.
Right? No, I think that's
because I'll be reading these.
right. But I think that
no mystery goals.
Right. I think beside the 11, the 11.
I think that's
everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the script, we're not talking theories and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we covered it.
I loved this movie.
I loved it too.
I really did. Like, gonna throw it out there. I think I saw Get Out 5 times in theaters. I think I might actually like this
more.
I liked it more because it's probably, I think
it's
this is more rewatchable. It's more fun. There's a lot of stuff to do. That's a slow burn kind of movie that, you know, is based on mystery.
I mean, I love it. I love Get Out. But
I think it's well constructed. This one's a little more fun. It feels more like a summer
to
movie.
To me, it's also
this
just
is way more fun.
To me, this is more reminiscent of horror movies from my childhood.
Yeah.
It really feels like a John Carpenter movie
or
something.
It's very fun.
It really feels like weird and old school, you know. Whereas Get Out was so prescient, and now this is like, this is Jordan Peele going, I'm happy.
I guess
that
it depends on what you want, you know? If you're looking for a heavy evening, watch Get Out. If you're looking
for
fun, this is more fun. Yeah.
I'm glad this is the one that was on the cover of Fangoria, because I think it deserves it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Us.
All right.
Go see it.
It's probably still out when this comes out, so.
Making billions of dollars.
It's passing the 1 billion mark as we speak.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah. All right, bye.
You've just listened to Writer's Blockbusters, a screenwriting podcast featuring two professionals and another guy. Available only on Thundergrunt.